My name's John Elliott, and this is a podcast from the Insights in Jazz series, www.dropback.co.uk.
Hi. This week's podcast is about the song Secret Love, and also about the Metaview. So this song, Secret Love, can be found in the book Insights in Jazz. The roadmap is on page 245. And if you look there at the form, we see the first interesting thing about this song. The form is AABC, but the two A sections are double length. So instead of the usual 8 bars, we see 16 bars for each A section. Now, this reminds me of other songs that have longer than the conventional length in this same sort of way. I'm thinking of Alone Together, which you can see on page 77. It's A sections. They're not double length, but they're longer than the usual 8 bars. And then at the end, they have a regular length B and C section. Dream Dancing has the same sort of thing on page 121. And Lady is a Tramp is another one that springs to mind on page 184. So just by looking at the roadmap, just by glancing at the roadmap, you can see that there's something different about these songs. And that is that they're top heavy. So they've got double length A sections, conventional bridge length, and then a different C section to finish off. Okay, so that's just the bird's eye view of the song. Let's think about meta view, which is something that I want to keep coming back to. The idea is that we want to develop a view above the song, which helps prevent us from getting lost when we're playing in a jam session or any other kind of jazz playing situation. The idea is that you know a song's framework and harmony well enough that you really can't get lost. Pretty much whatever happens, if you just wait and listen for a while, you'll hear the patterns that you know, and you'll know where to get back on the treadmill, so to speak. Having looked at lots of different standards, my meta view of how they pretty much all work is that, first of all, typically they establish a home key in some way or other using the kind of bricks that do establish keys, such as cadences, turnarounds, dropbacks, four and backs. These anchor down whatever key we're in at the time. And so typically songs will start by using these bricks to establish the home key, as it's known. The next thing they'll do is they'll knock that home key down, and by deliberately going to another key for maybe just for a couple of bars, maybe for 4 bars. But, you know, that's what they do to make it sound interesting. And then the final step, usually in the meta view of a standard, is finding a way to get back from wherever you've gone to, back to the home key, so that you can go around and start again on the next chorus. So let's look at the actual chords and bricks and joins used in this song. So let's first of all analyze one of the A sections. As usual, we'll start with the second A section because it's slightly simpler than the first one. These two A sections are almost completely identical, okay, but we'll see what the small differences are. So at the beginning of the second A section, we have the bricks on, off to 5, on, off to 5. That's the first half of the A section, one chord per bar. E flat major 7 for 1 bar, on. B flat 7 sus, or F minor 7 over B flat if you prefer. So it's some sort of 5 chord, off, and then the next 2 bars are the same again. So we've got an oscillation on-off thing going on here. It's worth saying that sometimes, quite often, this tune is played with these chords all over a dominant pedal, so a pedal based on 5 of the key. So a B-flat pedal in this case, because we're in E-flat. And that helps give it some sort of tension and suspension. before it finally resolves to the home chord, which could be the one in measure 5, or they could do a pedal all the way to the final two measures at the end of the A section. So that was the first half of the first line of the A section. Then in measure 5 of the A section, we see a break called TTFA, and this is what I called this very common way of dropping back. So TTFA stands for turn around to far away. Far away being a concept from the original Lego book where you start a cadence from, which is basically chord 2. So, but what it is it's part of the drop back family. So it's a break that starts on chord 1 and it ends on chord 6, 7. And the two chords in between are 4, 7 and 3, minor 7. And it's a very common move to get you from chord 1 to chord 6, 7, which is preparing you for a cadence home, usually. Okay, so that's measures 5 and 6. Measures 7 and 8 of the A section, I've put down here, I've labelled them as a nowhere launcher. And the chords I've got are B7 and B7. So the idea here is that, you know, it's like a 2-5, except instead of the 2, we've got a flat 6 dominant 7th, which is taken from the approach to the nowhere cadence. So it uses a nowhere chord on flat 6-7 instead of 2 minor 7. And many recordings of this song will actually just use a regular launcher here. So the B7 here is optional. You can just play an F minor 7, B flat 7. Okay, so that's the first line of the A section. Now the second line of the A section, remember we're looking at this second A section here, it has a 3 goes cadence. So basically it's 2-5, 2-5, 2-5, 1. So eventually it gets to resolving the cadence, but it does the approach to a cadence, the 2-5 part, 3 times, hence it's called a 3 goes. At the end, after that, there's a sidewinder launcher with the blue colouring to indicate minor. And you expect the minor chords on a sidewinder launcher, you'll remember from previous podcasts, because it generally takes you to the relative minor. So it's most common that the 2-5 after a sidewinder will actually be a minor 2-5, as we've got here. Okay, so that is one of the A sections analysed. Now, let's go back to the first A section and look at the only difference, which is that instead of resolving at the end of the A section onto the expected E flat, we have a suspended planol turnaround, a spot, instead, which is just to turn us back to start again. So instead of E flat, we get G minor 7, which is obviously chord 3 instead of chord 1. And that's why the join between the B flat 7 and the spot, I've called it a pullback, because it's the same kind of join that you have to do to get from when you're doing a pullback to get from chord 5 to chord 3. So it's quite a common move that you have to do, and you get quite used to doing this after playing a few tunes in a few different keys. And so that has a spot at the end rather than resolving to E flat, and that turns us back to do it again. So that's the two A sections analysed. Then let's look at the B section. Now the B section is pretty simple. As I said, we've launched to the relative minor, so we're expecting C minor. But actually what it cleverly does here is it uses that C minor 7 rather than being a tonic minor, where it has really modulated to C minor, it becomes the 2 of a regular cadence. So instead of the C minor key that we might expect. We're actually doing a cadence in the B section to key 5, which is B flat major 7. So we get C minor 7, F7, B flat major 7, just a regular cadence to establish a temporary key of B flat. Okay, so we've gone to key 5. Now next, we have a new horizon join, which we've seen before, which means that the root stays the same, and the next cadence starts on B flat minor 7, goes to E flat 7, A flat major 7. So we're doing a cadence here to key 4, which is a very common place to go. Now, a confession I've got to make here is that in my roadmap in the book, I forgot to put in the join between the A flat major 7 and the A flat minor 7 that comes next. So it's just another new horizon. Okay, so this bridge has two new horizon joins in it, and the second one's here between the A flat major 7 and the A flat minor 7. And the brick that we see at the very end of the B section, or the bridge, it's just a launcher. Okay, so it's a 2-5 in yet another key. And it turns out that this launcher is the one that makes a Yardbird cadence with chord 1, which is what comes next in the C section. So that's why I've put a brackets Yardbird join between the D flat 7 and the E flat major 7. It's just to remind you that you're not actually launching it where you'd expect to launch, which would be G flat major here. A flat minor 7, D flat 7 would tend to resolve to G flat major 7, but actually, because it's a Yardbird cadence, we're resolving back to E flat major 7 at the beginning of the C section. So it's found a clever way of getting back to the home key. Okay, so let's finally look at the C section. The first half of this C section, if you look at it in the meta view, is it's starting resolved in the home key, E flat major 7, and it's ultimately dropping back with a C7 in measure 4 of the C section. And it just needs to find a way of getting between these two chords. And there are a few different ways that you could do this that would fit with the tune. And we'll talk about this later under the idea of substitution. But the one here in this roadmap that I've given is it does a diatonic progression up the scale. So E flat major 7, F minor 7, then we get G half diminished going to C7. So the drop back actually starts, I would say, on the G half diminished, because that is the C7 broken down into its 2-5. And it's been given minor harmony, that's why the color blue here is in the roadmap. G half diminished to C7. So that those two measures together are actually the drop back rather than just the C7, I would say. And then the final half of the C section is just what we tend to find in 95% or more of these kind of standards. The last four measures will be made up of some sort of cadence home, and that's exactly what happens here. So that's all of the bricks and all of the joins considered. There are a few joins, a few extra joins that I've written in the roadmap in the A sections. So for example, at the end of the first line of the A sections, I put brackets two goes to remind you that you don't resolve on the next line to the expected E-flat, but you actually have another go at the 2-5 to E-flat. So, you know, you go back to F minor 7 rather than resolving to E-flat. Between the C7 and the B7 in the first line of the A section, I've put down a half step. It's not really necessary. I mean, you'll hear it when you're playing this, once you've heard the song a few times, that you're either going to go from the C7 in the sixth measure to the B7 in the seventh measure, you'll know you're going to go down a semitone. Or if you choose to play F7 instead, you'll know you're going to go around the cycle. So you hardly need that down a half step join there. It's a bit of overkill, I would say. It's worth saying that the New Horizon join in the bridge is quite interesting. The way this tune works is it's kind of like an archetypal version of the New Horizon join between regular cadences, and the actual melody notes spell out the interesting notes, the interesting new notes in the new key as you go beyond the New Horizon. So that makes it kind of it really does make the feel of those joins really clear. If you look on page 45 of the book, you can see the cycle of keys and how the New Horizon join can take you. If you look at the cycle, it has New Horizon in the middle of it, and you start at key 5 and you follow the line, it takes you to key 4, and if you follow the line one more time, because we have two New Horizons here, it would take you to key flat 3, which is the G flat major key that we talked about that we don't actually go to, because we, instead of having a regular cadence, we have a Yardbird cadence that flips us back home rather cleverly. Okay, so back to the meta view. We've talked about how we establish the key. So the A section uses bricks that are very good at establishing keys. So we've seen we've got turnarounds, we've got cadences, we've got drop backs. We don't have any fore and backs in this tune, but we've got all of the other ones which are really excellent at establishing the key. And this is a really good opportunity. You've got 16 bars twice of bricks that are just basically establishing the key of E flat. It's a really good opportunity for you to experiment with side slipping in your playing. So when you deliberately play in a different key from the one that you're in. Just to create tension. This is a kind of, Dave Liebman's written books on this idea of tension and release, you know, where you deliberately think a different 2-5 and you play as though those chords were occurring even though they're not, and you temporarily create tension, and then you, when you've had enough of that, you slip back into playing in the key, and it's quite a cool effect. And that's one of the things that you can do when you've got such a vast expanse of bricks that are confirming the original key, the home key, for so long in the song, to make it a bit less boring, I guess. I thought it'd be interesting from a meta view point of view to see the benefit of how, if you understand the meta view of a song, it can make you more robust to substitution. So if other players in the band suddenly decide that they're going to start substituting chords, because you understand the families of bricks which actually are equivalent to each other, then this won't really bother you. So somebody might decide to play this tune where instead of using on, off, on, off for the first four measures of the A sections, sometimes this could be written as, you know, pots, plain old turnarounds instead. So instead of E flat for a bar and then B flat 7 or B flat 7 sus for a bar, you might see E flat major 7, C7 in the first bar, F minor 7, B flat 7 in the second bar. But you realize pretty quickly that, you know, these are equivalent bricks. And spot is another equivalent brick, obviously, to pot. And what's happening is we're having a bar of tonic harmony, where we've got the chord 1 and chord 6, potentially both tonic harmony chords. And then in the second bar, we have chord 2 and chord 5, which are, you know, which are doing the classic 2-5 move, which functionally are just a breakdown of the dominant harmony. So the on-off, for me, the on-off brick does actually capture what's going on. If you want to put in some more detail, you can play turnarounds in this position, but if somebody starts to do that, or if someone gives you a chart that does that, it doesn't mean that you need to be confused or knocked off kilter at all. Next example of substitution is the nowhere launcher at the end of the first line of the A section, the B7, B-flat 7. I mentioned earlier on that you can, it's perfectly fine, it's often played as just F minor 7, B flat 7, which, as you might expect. And it's just because they're both just cadence launchers. You know, they're both the approach chords to cadence, to very common cadences. And oftentimes it doesn't matter which you use. And if someone were to use the other one from the one that you're expecting, really, it's a sound that you should hear, and it really, really shouldn't matter too much to you. A third example of substitution is different ways of dropping back. So we've talked about the TTFA drop back, which is in starts in measure 5 of the A section. That's one way of getting from E flat major 7 to C7, from chord 1 to chord 6-7. There are, you know, various other ways you could do it. I mean, one classic one is the chromatic drop back. So you might play instead, you might play E flat major 7, D7, D flat 7, C7. And that works fine with the tune as well. And then if we look at the end of the song in the C section, as I said, the first four measures of the C section are essentially a drop back move from chord 1 to chord 6-7. And again, you could experiment with different kinds of drop back from the one that's given here. You know, you might do one that goes via chord 4, the TTFA move instead of chord 2, or you might try some sort of chromatic drop back. In this case, the second chord of the chromatic drop back clashes with the melody, so you have to modify what would be the D7 in the second measure of the C section. You have to modify that to be something like a D half diminished, but you can still do that chromatic bass line. It still does work, and you might prefer that as a substitution. There's a couple of recordings of this song that you might like to listen to. One of my favorites is Derek Watkins with the Brian Lemon Quartet on an album called Over the Rainbow. And just been listening to that, and they do some nice stuff with pedals on the first four measures of the song. And you can hear very clearly how the two A sections give the soloists plenty of opportunity to play all sorts of tricks around, in the key, in the home key and relative to the home key, before they have to become disciplined and ride the changes in more detail on the bridge, the B section, where, you know, those key changing cadences and those joins are really have to be spelled out if your solo is going to sound right. Another recording is by Eddie Lockjaw Davis, and I thought what was interesting about this one that I found on Spotify was that in the second half of the A sections, where we've got this three goes approach, which by the way was preceded by another approach, so it's a four goes approach going across the two lines, you might get pretty bored with this 2-5, 2-5, 2-5, 2-5 stuff that's going on. And what they do after the head in the solos is that they, instead of the F minor 7, B flat 7, they use F minor 7 going up a semitone to F sharp minor 7, which is like, you know, temporarily giving you a different key. That side slipping effect again, and giving you a different key to play over for a measure. So you might want to check those out and see what you think. So that's pretty much it for Secret Love and the MetaView. John Elliott. I'm the author of Insights in Jazz, which is available from www.dropback.co.uk. If you've got any questions you'd like to ask about the podcast or the method in the book, or any suggestions you'd like to make for future podcasts, then please contact me by emailing me at john@dropback.co.uk. If you found this podcast useful and you'd like to leave a tip, then you can visit the website where there's a PayPal donate button. Thanks for listening.